Hello there. This episode is sponsored by Red Wine. I'm going to Milan in a couple weeks, so I need to get my taste buds acclimated to it. If you like what you hear, please like, subscribe, tell your friends, and without further ado, here's the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Padawan Unlimited. I am Gil, joined by Corey and Rob. How are you guys doing?
Good. Thanks.
Yeah,
thanks
not too bad.
Having us again.
Yeah.
This is great.
It's like we're stuck here now. We're permanent.
Yeah.
You can't get rid of us, Gil. We're like barnacles.
Permanent hosts. We are on episode 40. So I've been doing this for 40 weeks.
Whoa, milestone.
Yeah, great milestone. So there's a lot to talk about. It's a kind of celebratory in that sense. I can't wait till 50. I think when 50 occurs, I might give like a box away or something. I don't know what it's going to be.
Ooh,
but like,
so generous.
You know, we'll see what happens. I'm not going to promise what box is going to be. Like
Twilight box.
Could be a Twilight
box. It might just be a cardboard box.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. It could be just a cardboard box.
Oh, no.
Who knows?
An empty box.
A deck box. Yeah, a deck box. I do actually have a soft crate here I won at Mythicos, actually.
Yeah, it was Mythicos, right?
So, I mean, again, giveaways that I want to give away, but gotta hoard the materials first in order to give it away. So some logistical stuff, as always, before we get into the new format, which is logistics and then collection kind of talk, meta talk, and then main topic. For logistics for today, I want to thank everyone's patience out there for the last couple of weeks as we've kind of been figuring out and retooling our sound, our audio, our lighting, right? We're trying a lot of different things. And we want to improve, understanding that there's been inconsistencies over the last couple of weeks in terms of like audio, again, like audio, sound, lighting with video, etc. So DB apologize if that kind of upsets anyone's auditory senses, but again, we're working on it and we might be moving to a new platform. We already did that once. We might do that again. We actually did some testing, 30 minutes ago, to see how to even use the new platform. But look forward to that in potentially the near future. And then also, you know, get rid of those, you know, more professionalism, I'll say, in terms of the podcast, right? And next piece of logistics is that this is being recorded on a Tuesday night, March 18th. So although this is releasing on Thursday the 20th, I've already checked the raffle. For the raffle entries for the OG like podcast listeners, I'm happy to say there's over a dozen people who've actually submitted a form. The form closes on Thursday, you get that 1 week window, and I'm gonna remind. This will be like this make this a reminder because by the end of the day, Business East Coast United States, that form is officially close. It won't be the only one we do, but this is a really good one in that you get 100 entries just for filling out a form. And again, I'm not selling that information. You're not being added to the subscription box or anything like that. It's just for my own edge. It's only just to have it to be able to enter you all in that 2024 convention pack, which whenever we hit 500 subs on YouTube, is what we're going to do. Okay. So the main topic today is going to be a surprise topic in that I don't think really we didn't really talk about it in the past, but I'm going to go to Milan to compete in the first ever like sector qualifier. We'll get to that point. But before that, we're going to do a quick collection update in terms of the state of the Swoo collection for, I guess, Corey yourself, but also the world. What do you got for us, buddy?
Absolutely. Well, I got my last Carbonite box that I'm opening. And so I did that last night with some buddies. And I was very fortunate. And I pulled a legendary or serial Shadowcaster number 203. But nice. Beyond that, I also pulled a another showcase.
His 30th showcase.
So I've opened...
Are you serious?
Yeah, I saw him do it last night.
So I got Rose. Sorry, if you're watching, it's a little blurry, but I got Rose. I actually just got a rose before.
Oh,
and
no.
So now I have two roses. But it wasn't a pull. I got it from a McClunky member, Brandon. He had pulled it, and so I got it from him. But yeah, I was like, oh, you know what? I'm not going to open up another one. I've opened every single Jump to Lightspeed box I've opened, except for one I've pulled a showcase in. So I feel pretty fortunate. It's been pretty good. And the only one that wasn't, I've opened two normal booster boxes, and one of them had an Akbar in it.
Another.
And
that's
so. Three Akbars. And so I would love to give this away to one of our listeners, this Akbar showcase.
That's super generous.
So we got to think about how we're going to do that, because we love giving things away on this podcast. But yeah, it's one of our listeners. I would like to give this to you guys. So we'll think about that and maybe announce something next week and go from there.
Okay, awesome. Corey,
you're breaking up the playset?
Yeah. I can't do it.
That's awesome. Man. Thank you. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's just like, you know, he's got the playset of Akbars. Now he just needs a half dozen roses.
No.
I got dad jokes for days.
Man. Full dozens, you know.
Oh my god. But yeah, that's so funny.
That's where we're at here. I've been pretty fortunate with the Jump to Lightspeed stuff. I went to a bunch of pre-releases, got most of everything I need for my decks that I'm looking at building a Boba yellow and a Vonreg yellow. I want to see which one feels better. I've been playing the Vonreg one more. It's very fast, but it just, like, why, everyone's question is, why play a worse Jango, right? Jango's red yellow and you're doing very similar things, so why do it? And it's like, I think, because I just don't want to play Jango.
We'll get to that when we'll talk more about that once we get to a meta update. But I totally hear you there. Well, I mean, we just played a game, honestly. So, and you beat me as the Vonreg player. But
you made a couple of misplays. But yeah,
I definitely made some misplays. I'm still learning the game as expected.
We all are.
Yeah. But you know what I will say about the collection?
He's going to Milan, folks. He's going to Milan.
What I will say about the collection is that I've opened up three boxes of regular stuff and then three boxes of Carbonite. The regular stuff is really spread. I mean, I don't really see a collation, and like every box has had like almost every single like rare, you know, like it's really spread. They really I feel like they changed how it's organized within the boxes and stuff to be able to be a little more randomized. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Oh, for sure. I popped three boxes, and I think I pulled 17 legendaries out of three normal boxes. One of them was a 6, one of them was a 7, one of them was a 4. And then, but like my rare spread was a little bit all over the place. Like, so I just got my second Ahsoka Tano, but I've got like, I don't know, you know, 6 Lightspeed Assaults, you know, so it's a little bit random in terms of where it is. So certain cards I've pulled a lot of, certain cards I haven't.
I found that, well, at least what I'm seeing is that the Carbonite boxes were very popular. They did a great job with the Carbonite boxes, and opening up a regular booster box after opening a Carbonite box, it's just like a feel bad a little bit. It's like, oh, what am I doing here? It's like, I want these Carbonite boxes. But I think, because right away with Shadows, like people were like, oh, it's mapped. We know the mappings, we can do this, we know exactly what it is. Twilight was a little bit, we still understood, like, hey, this is going to, you know, this is probably what's going to happen, what we're going to get. But I don't think people really cared as much in this one, because the Carbonite boxes just came out of, like, at the full speed, and it's like, hey, look at Carbonite boxes, look over here, the shiny thing, and like, don't worry about the other thing. So people didn't really like, hey, oh, I got all the stuff I need in my Carbonite boxes, I don't really need to focus on these other ones here. And I don't know if that's hurting, that it hurts them or it helps them. I think right now the excitement is cool, but is that drop off gonna be like significant?
Like, for me, I've purchased probably two Carbonite. Well, I'll have purchased two. My second one's coming on Friday. And then I got three regulars. That gave me the three regular boxes. Basically, gave me a place set of commons and uncommons. You know, with maybe one or two that I'm missing, like a full play set of. And I got a pretty good spread of both legendaries and rares. So I'm near full play sets for this entire set out of the three boxes and the carbonites. And I've opened a handful of carbonites. You know, probably outside of it, so I'm probably going to be like three carbonites and three. Plus whatever regular boxes by the time everything is done.
But
you did really well on your previous kits.
Yeah, I did.
I will say I think that the carbonite boxes. Well, okay, so all carbonite. Apparently, almost all, if not all, the carbonite boxes have already been sold in terms of like from distributors. Like that's been reported by FFG. In some form or fashion, so they're all out in the wild at this point. I don't think everything, all of them have been opened, I'll say, but that's a strong indication of people who want to buy that. But also, I think it just serves like the top 1%. Like some people are like out there buying like cases of them, you know, and there's like a huge steep like J hook or like a curve that goes all the way up, and there's some people who are like maybe buying like up to three, like maybe a case as the max. Of like a normal person, and then the booster boxes. I think it's going to hurt those sales. I don't know if it's bad for the game long term in terms of just playing, because what that does is that it makes the booster box, the regular booster boxes, cheaper for the average player. And now they're not paying MSRP of 120. They're probably paying $85-$75, right? Which is not necessarily the cheapest, but a more acceptable entry point. And also for just a general collection, very good pricing. I'll say.
Yeah.
You know, right? 80 is really good pricing to the point where it's like the stores are not going to make money the way they would hope, I would say. And so that's the one worry that I have is that they become too cheap. That's also not good. It's good. If you're at $90, I think that's good. Like that's a good spot because you're well under MSRP, but you're also the margin for the stores makes it worth it for them to buy it and to support it.
Yeah.
What I will say though is that they're making their money on the carbonites. You know, So I don't know if the swing is the same, but you know, if our local experience is any indicator, right? Like Mythicos, I know sold a whole bunch. Red Seal sold a whole bunch. Bearded has sold a whole bunch. You know, like so all the local stores around here have sold a lot of carbonites, and even if they haven't sold the main booster boxes or as many of the main booster boxes, they're still, I mean, again, you know, a box is MSRP at 300 and that's pretty much what they're selling at. So, you know,
Those have not really gone down.
Yeah. Those have not gone down at all. No. So, you know, if stores are getting, I don't even know what their numbers are, but you know, let's just say for sake of argument, they get, I don't know, 20, right? Do the math, you know, I mean like they're not buying them at 300 a pop. They're, you know, that's what the MSRP is. So
they're buying them at like, they're making a carbonite booster box from a distributor. As long as you're not like a really big store that can buy like 10,000 of them or whatever, is roughly 200, 210. For that's like the distributor price to retailers. Mm-hmm. So if they sell for 300, you know, your gross profit's pretty big there. You could still sell at 275, and then a booster box, from my understanding, is actually somewhere around 70, like a regular booster box is actually the distributor price. So you're right, at $80, that's like not really profitable, like
really worth it.
They're like they're not really worth it. But if they can sell for 90, you know, again, that's a tough call, right? Because do you over, you don't also necessarily want to overspend, a store that wants to overspend on carbonite and not have regular product, because then what if that doesn't sell and you're screwed like big time, right? Okay. But either way, I think Legends of the Force, that next set, so this was just like random ships, right? Silver fish, I don't even know. You know what I mean, like silver angel,
come on.
And then you have like Phantom gold leader, you know, like some of these are just like, they're kind of important, I
the
guess,
gold leader's a falcon, like,
yeah, but then they have another Millennium Falcon, so why not just get the Millennium Falcon? You know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying,
two Millennium
like,
Falcons.
I did the analysis in another video, and I saw that the prices of these these showcases has ranged anywhere between $200 to $600. There was an Executor number 12 out of 250 that sold for $1,500. Right. So, but, and there's another Executor that sold for like, it wasn't even a good number, it sold for like $800. So Executor out of all those ships is the one that's selling the best. All the other ones are like below $600 and below. And so it's, where was I going with this? I think it's okay, like in terms of like interest for these. Legends of the Force. If you're gonna tell me you're gonna get like a Darth Revan, if you're gonna get like another like an epic Luke, another legendary Luke, those are gonna go buck wild. And I think those are gonna sell really like hotcakes for any collection.
The new Vader legend. You know any of the Qui-Gon man. Yeah. People have been clamoring
like
for him.
Big names. You want the characters for sure, and the characters are definitely going to do well. And like, it's because of the ships, the ships that are characters are doing well, right? Those are the ones like that are going to be like Fett's Firespray and Millennium Falcon and Executor. But I do think the sideways, the horizontal ones, are going to be more valuable because there are only two of those ships that are horizontal, and so the uniqueness of them makes them even more unique within the prestige set. So I could see why Executor and then Annihilator being more.
And they point in different directions, right? Like they're actually arrowed in different directions. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's the case. I feel Executor points
they are.
To the right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's so exciting.
And Annihilator's to the left.
Yeah. Which, by the way, so some unique cards that are coming out in the near future in terms of sector and regionals. We'll talk about that soon as part of the collection, but we'll wait until the end. But you know, I think we've exhausted the collection talk and math and everything. So let's move on to meta. Rob, what have you got for us?
Oh, fun stuff. So I just got back from my locals tonight at Bearded and, Bearded Dragon. Shout out to those guys, 'cause they run a great event, you know, every Tuesday. We're doing, so I've been playing Django 'cause Django be good. And he's just gotten better. But there is going to be some counterplay to him coming up. So there's two things that I've been seeing. One is that the rise of Gar Saxon. I saw that tonight. That's interesting. And he's kind of a direct response to Django, because you get a bunch of shielded units that are upgraded. They attack for more. They're not completely immune to ping, but they pass the first ping, so it's harder to kind of tap everybody out, but that's not really what I kind of wanted to go into tonight, because the other one that I think you're going to see a lot of, and this shouldn't really come as a huge surprise, is Piet, Admiral Piet.
Who is ironically the last admiral of the Executor Super Star Destroyer that was at the Battle of Endor. Just a shout out to Admiral Piet. He took over Admiral Ozzel's role when he failed Darth Vader. He gets choked out. Ozzel gets choked out. Not Piet. Piet makes it a long time. He has a good run.
Yeah.
as an admiral.
Yeah, he does.
Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
So Piet. Is, if you are not familiar with him, he is the rare green villainous leader that makes all capital ships cheaper. So on his leader side, you tap him and it reduces it by one. And on his unit side, he's just active. It's just an always active two cost reduction to capital ships, which is really big. The primary reason for this is that there were a couple cards that released in this set that really, really ramp well into one another, literally, the ramp cards. You have your typical like super laser tech or resupply on turn two. But what that does is, as long as you ramp, that means that the next turn you're able to play the resupply carrier, which is the six drop, 4/6, take the top card of your deck and turn it into a resource. But because of Piet's ability, now you can play it for 5 resources, which is really good, turns out, because now you're in a situation where you've ramped twice, you're getting a body from it, and not in the same way that you get a body from Super Laser Tech, and it is very strong. So you're seeing now, you know, you've ramped up to 7 by turn 5, something like that. And you're dropping things like Arcturne's Assault Carrier, which also ramps you. Funnily enough, ambushes and kills something more than likely, and then you get another resource. So you're getting to, like, Devastator. That's what it is. You're getting Devastator on 6 is if you ramp properly. And then suddenly you've got a 10-10 Sentinel in space that also drops 8 resources on somebody, because you get to 8 resources, you flip Piet, now it's 2 less, and then you drop Devastator.
And it's got Overwhelm.
And it's got Overwhelm. It's a Sentinel. Like there's so many things. And then you've also got a number of other like plays kind of in between there. Now, I've been brewing and working with Piet Double Green. I'm not sure it's the best version of him. I tested it out a little bit tonight, and it turns out, you know, Double Green still just dies to Sabine.
I think Piet just doesn't do well against Sabine. It could beat a lot of other decks, but Sabine is just simply too fast. And if you're going all space and you're just letting Sabine run the ground, it's just too difficult. Which is fine, actually. I would probably still take that bet, because if your only concern is Sabine's getting wrecked by a lot of other decks now. Like, it's she's not doing well. I don't know. What do you think, Corey?
No, I was going to say the biggest issue you're going to have is aggro. And so Sabine is a very fast deck, which beats it almost 9 out of 10 times for the most part. And then I don't know how it is against Han, but Han is very fast as well and can go quick. And that's mostly ground as well. So I'm curious to see how that goes.
So
I would be nervous.
Yeah, so where I'm going with those is that I don't think I was testing a Double Green tonight. I don't think that's necessarily the way. Shout out to Mike Elemental, who is running him Blue Green, I wanted to start Double Green and see how it went, but, you know, eventually ending up back at Blue Green most likely. And that is pretty good, because you have a lot of single target removal, you know, so like a lot of the stuff that would be damage based removal in Piet now turns into single target removal, just kill a thing. And then on top of it, and shout out to my significant other, Sam, who gave this suggestion to Mike on Saturday. He tested it out tonight, actually. And that is, you can play, Redemption, because it's capital shift. And now you're playing it, you're ramping so much, you know, you don't care that it costs 9. Yeah.
Off aspect redemption.
Off spec redemption. And suddenly, so now if you're worried about, like, you know, you get to 9, you'll get to 9 resources, and that's not assuming that Piet's flipped. If he's flipped, it's still 8. So you're just paying it at cost, and you get to 8 resources pretty darn fast. So you can now suddenly, like, drop out redemption. You're like, cool, you were burning me down, I'll just heal it, you know. And that's a pretty big swing, particularly when then you just start dropping other triangles behind it, and it's like, now what are you going to do?
You know, that's fascinating. I always thought, with Villainy, I'm always thinking of, like, Destruction. So my thing would be going with Piet Red, Regression, because you have access to all the hand disruption that you need in terms of, like, well, not all of it, but, like, you get some aggression cards like Pillage if you need it for against control, maybe. Mm-hmm. But also you get Open Fire, you get Daring Raid, you get Planetary Bombardment, which you would probably be able to activate whenever you want, so that's just 12 on the board,
for sure,
you know. And I just feel like that one seems like it, to me, the I don't know if it's gonna be the best one, but I feel like that's a good color combination.
See, the thing with Blue Green is that you're getting things like Vader, you're getting Snoke, you're getting Avenger,
Vader,
right?
You don't have any pulls with Vader.
So that's the thing, though. I think you do. You know, my initial reaction was, all right, let's lean into this. Let's go all triangles all the time. And I think the deck is better served by a little bit of restraint in that regard. So you're not banking on, you know, Piet 100% to get you to, you know, whatever it is that you want to get, you know, whether it's just, you know, three different triangles out on the board. If you, and the other thing about that is that you're so space heavy at that point that, as you kind of pointed out, Gil, if you're playing Sabine, just as an example, but, you know, anything that goes ground heavy, you're not going to be able to really deal with that at all. So, using things like, like Sentinel, you know, things that'll flip off of Vader, and now suddenly you've got a presence on the ground, to at least, if not, you know, if not like win the ground race, at least like slow it down, and that's all really all you need. So you slow it down, and then you drop a redemption, you heal back up, and now suddenly you can drop that triangle a little bit later. Doesn't matter as much, and then just take over the game from there.
I'll say, you know, I'm gonna keep poking holes at Piet, not because I don't believe, but I want to be able to have this made a conversation that may be helpful to people who are listening and are trying to play Piet. Now, a counter to Piet that I've seen, and it will be in access for any access of this card, is very easy to any cunning deck, Lux Bunteri. Lux Bunteri,
he's great.
You know, it was like,
so what does he do, Bill? Because
so Lux Bunteri is like, I think it's a 2-drop.
If he pay less.
Yeah,
it's a 2-drop.
It's 2-drop. If it's a 3/2 or something like that, if anyone plays a unit that costs less than their like paid cost, like, or what it says on the top of the card,
printed cost,
you get printed cost, you get to exhaust the unit, right?
On the you other get to side. Ready him.
No, you get to exhaust. Lux Bunteri. Let's Google that right now. I'm pretty sure. Go.
I think I'm pretty. I'm thinking. If I'm thinking of the wrong guy, maybe I'm thinking of the wrong guy.
Lux. You know what? Let's do this live.
You get to ready him.
You get to ready him. Yeah.
Wait, who's the other
so
one?
It's like a 3/2.
So like, because like with Von Reg, I play him in Von Reg. I drop him, and then you put out that green bounty ship that's like a 3/5 for 3 costs on turn 1 instead. I ready him, and then I can hit. It's pretty nice.
It's a little bit of both.
Already or exhaust.
It's exhaust. Yeah. So we're right.
So we're both right.
Yeah. That's right. What I was like, that can't be like, that's not just ready. So what the this is why we have the conversation. What happens is that you can either ready one of your units and get the damage in, or if they already have another capital ship in place that's about to attack, exhaust it. And that gives you a turn to survive. Which I think is a really strong counter against a Piet deck.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it is a bad option in there. But at the end of the day, look, I mean, it's not bouncing it. It's not, you know, getting it off the board. It's okay. It buys you a turn. If it wins you the game, it's great, right? But if not, then you still have 2 triangles to deal with the next turn. The other thing I'm kind of looking at is, believe it or not, while I think Executor got panned a little bit, I do think it's actually a pretty decent drop in here. It's immune to Power of the Dark Side. It's immune to a lot of things because it just drops ties when it comes out. And, you know, there I don't know if this is good, but it is certainly funny. You can play Executor, drops 3. And you attack with it, it drops 3 the next turn, and then you can pop Finalizer behind it, and then all those ties steal stuff.
I mean,
it's funny.
Very combo-y.
I don't think it's good. I think it's very funny.
I was thinking more along the lines of, if you're playing Piet Yellow Cunning, and you sneak attack it in so that it's...
Yeah, it drops 9 ties.
Drops 9 ties for, what's the cost, 6 or something? 7? And then you get to attack, which... they're probably going to waylay it or something, do something crazy, because not let it happen. And then it's still so there'll be 6 ties on the board after that turn. And it should be, if you're playing right, before like a massive wipe occurs, like a super laser blast or a Snoke.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it's huge.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's good, but it is very funny. Look, I think at the end of the day, you know, when you look at Piet, Avenger is still like the gold standard, right? It drops on 9 and now drops even earlier. Sorry, you're gonna have to deal with that. You're gonna have to deal with it a lot sooner than you thought, and you're also ramping to it way fast. I mean, you're you're on 8 resources, which is when you can drop it now, even if you haven't flipped yet. Again, by you're there by turn 6. By 6 resources. By turn 6. Because you've probably ramped 3 times.
So Corey, do you think Von Reg can beat Piet?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely can. I played against Piet Blue and Piet Red on Sunday with Von Reg, and I had a better time against Piet Blue than I did against Red.
Yeah.
So there's that. But Avenger is just ridiculous, because if you have Piet unit out,
yes,
you ambush an Avenger, it kills 3 things. Because it comes out, kills something, kills whatever it ambushes into, and then, like, because it attacked, it also kills something else.
Yeah.
It's like, what the... It's ridiculous. So if you are playing against Piet, you need to be ready for... If Piet unit is out, like, all those big ships...
Kill that thing
with fire. Just keep coming. Either don't have something to get hit with, or make sure that Piet's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Piet is going to. I think Piet's going to kind of fall in a little bit of the same space that Palpatine does to some extent. Whereas he's a very big threat that you have to deal with. But if you can outrace him, which aggro can, then you're probably gonna take him out. But he's going to handle mid range, I think, particularly well, and because he's kind of a mid range deck as he is, but he's just better in a lot of ways, and and I think into control, like, that's where things like I said that's where things like Executor come in, where you're like, okay, you know, I'm gonna try and make myself as immune as possible to single target removal, things like Power of the Dark, so I make it harder. You know, you run, I honestly think you do run 3 Relentlesses main deck, because you get to it so quick, and then now against single target removal you have a really hard time in dealing with that, and it's still an 8/8 body at the end of the day, so you know.
Yeah. Speaking of, removal, let's remove this conversation for a quick second and go over to the next topic. That was a really bad segue, so I apologize for that. But it is relevant in that we were talking about meta, and kind of mentioned before, I am going to Milan. I actually just registered officially on Melee, have my flight, so bought all the tickets. The Milan sector qualifier, so Milan, Italy sector qualifier, has about 500 people from what I understand, maybe a little bit more at this point. So there's a strong presence there. I think it's open to like 1,000 or people or whatever. And
this is the first big event for this, right? For the sectors and regionals, this is the first one.
Yeah. I think it's the first one, because then the next set is in April 6th, 5th or 6th, and that's going to be in the UK and Denver. Right. So this one's going to be huge. And I think at least some big names are going to be there. You could potentially guess who they are. Shout out to if anyone listening is going to the sector qualifier, I will be there in a purple shirt. That says Padawan Unlimited on the back and the front. Feel free to say hi. I will try to learn some Italian within the next couple of weeks in terms to try to be a little bit more, you know, culturally conscious, because I want to be respectful of the area. But what do you guys think anyone should do if they're going to a major 2-day tournament? What do you think they should do to prepare? Now, Rob, kind of. I know you've been talking a lot in terms of like the meta, so we'll give you a break real quick. Go over to Corey first, and then. So, what do you think?
Well, it's like you got to look at it as it's like any other tournament you're doing, but on a much larger scale. For one, you're traveling internationally. You're traveling overseas in a country that you don't know the language. We just learned, obviously. But
yeah,
what I would say is, like, the biggest thing for me, what I would do is prepare everything before the day before, or even 2 days before you need it, right? So let's say I need to pack up and get ready all my stuff. I'm going to make sure I have all that packed and ready to go a couple days before or a day before I actually need the things. Once you're going to the tournament, it's a couple days, right? Like, it's a 2-day event.
It's like 2-day event, yeah.
Right? So, like, you get to a hotel, make sure everything you need for the next day is ready to go before. Don't wake up and start packing your stuff, right? That's, I would be prepared to get my stuff ready and out by the door or wherever I need to have it. So that way I have it all. I don't need to think about things before I leave, right? Because like I go to the gym before I go to work. I make sure all my stuff is like packed up and ready to go before I go to sleep. And now when I get up, all I have to do is do my normal routine, pick up my bag, and I'm out the door. I don't have to think about, oh, do I need to get my cards or my whatever, right? So that's where I would like, you don't need to waste mental energy on getting ready. Like that can happen before you go to sleep.
That is sound advice, something that I did not do at my second PQ. So don't do what I did and just grab
I was about to call you out on that.
Don't do what I did and just bring a box of cards thinking you have all the cards you need to to the hotel before a tournament starts and realize you actually have only 50% of the cards or something, or some nonsense like that. So that's sound advice. Prepare in advance. I think what I'm going to do is actually I'm going to bring three different decks. I'm going to bring an aggro deck, a mid-range deck, and maybe another mid-range deck or a fun deck, a control and or fun deck, because it's a multi-day event. There's going to be a prize wall, as we've talked about in previous podcasts. So
we need to go through. Sure.
Yeah, we're going to have to go through the... Huh?
Side events?
Side events.
You can do it outside of the... Yeah,
there's side events to prepare for. I just want to make sure I have multiple decks, and I'll bring like some extra cards. We'll see what happens. How about you, Rob? What do you think a person going to a multi-day event should do in preparation?
Don't bring your Ray double blue when you think you're going to play Ray red.
Okay.
In serious though, in case anyone, that's a little bit of an inside joke, because that's what Gil did when he went to Rochester. The honest truth is, so I used to actually do this quite a bit. I used to play, I've mentioned it before, miniature games competitively, and I used to go to tournaments out of state. So I'm not flying to Milan, but I'm taking all my stuff and I'm driving, 6 to 8 hours away. Mm-hmm. So I got to have everything that I need with me. Otherwise it's not there. Right. So what I often did for this was, I prepared my lists ahead of time, for what I was going to be bringing, what was going to be in that list, and any possible, but then additionally, it's not only the list, but any possible substitutions that I've been thinking about. I am one who says, who generally will say, like, I'm going to commit to something and I'm not going to change it very much, but you may get there, because the other thing about this is that one, you're playing in Europe where the meta is going to be, while there's going to be some of the same stuff, I imagine there's going to be some different things. I remember looking at the PQs and we were seeing things like Fennec Red and other things that were not like on quote unquote meta within the US. So you may get there, play some casual games and realize, oh, this is going to be very prevalent here. I should have a potential counter for that. So any type of sort of tech cards that you're thinking about maybe working into your deck because it covers a certain matchup or something like that, bring those with you, because if you don't have them with you, you don't have them with you. We're only talking about, probably what, 20 to 30 cards at most, per deck, if that, so having those extra cards with you to, potentially sub in, sub out, that's always a good thing with you. Also have, to Corey's point, have all your stuff ready to go. So your tokens, your deck boxes, all that stuff, have that all prepped, packed, ready, know what you want in it, where you want it. Just the less, to Corey's point, the less you have to think about it, the more you can focus in on just your play. You're just, you're not worried about where did I put that thing? Like running around, in the hour before the tournament, trying to find that one card that you put somewhere and you can't remember where, and you're panicking about it. And then you get downstairs and you're all worked up and you're not thinking about your first game. You want to try to avoid that. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen, but you should at least try to avoid that. That's really it. And then honestly, just have fun, man. I mean, like in all seriousness, I play games competitively, but the goal of all of it is to have a good time. And if you get too caught up in like, how am I going to do? What am I, don't worry about it. just have fun. Go play games.
I mean,
meet people.
For me,
have a good time and learn Italian.
For me, the moment I go, I get two losses, I'm walking away. I'm gonna start playing events because like there's no point at that point. I mean, unless there's like some, and I don't know if this exists. Like if there's some like every time you play, you get a certain amount of prize wall points just to finish the tournament. If that happens, I'm playing, right? But if that doesn't happen, then it's better to just quit, I guess, at that point and go play prize wall stuff because you don't want to waste your time. If you're not X2 by the end of Swiss, you're not going to day two. That's just not going to happen.
Well, and right? frankly, X1 right now because of intentional draws.
No, but yeah, I mean, but I think this is an actual like rule for the sector qualifiers. I think it's like all X2s or something goes to the next day. But you're right. Also, the intentional draws does change the math, which you have to think about
for top cuts
and stuff. Yeah.
But no, for long tournaments, long days. Try to find those times where you can just like decompress and not think about stuff. Like, don't waste those moments where you're not doing anything. Just like find those moments and like cherish them. Where like I'm not doing anything. I finished early. I'm just gonna relax. I'm not gonna think about anything. Just take my mind off of stuff. Like, hey, my match ended in 30 minutes. I can focus on like just nothing or having a snack or like having some sugar or something like that. Because those long days can add up and it sneaks up on you and all of a sudden you're like brain dead and you're going to be making mistakes in the later matches because of that.
It's very true. Make sure you hydrate. So bring a water bottle, bring a refillable water bottle and have like some brain snacks, nuts, berries, things like that. Just something that
it's Italy, so I'll probably be drinking wine mid game.
Mm.
Grape juice.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that's all. You know, that's all sound advice. And at the end of the day, it's all about having fun. So if ultimately that's the main goal, and the moment you stop having fun, you should probably just take a beat and stop playing for a little bit. You know what I mean? Yeah. Until it gets fun again, right? My biggest concern, or my one of the things that scares me, is that the judges don't all speak all languages, I'll say. So, like, which, again, that's me going into a different territory. So it's not, like, I'm not saying that they need to know English. What I'm saying is that, like, I don't know Italian, right? I don't know French. I don't know German. So if all the, and this is a Euro event, and I'm so concerned that I'm going to walk in there, and there's going to be, like, maybe one judge that knows some English, and then I have to just know every card, because I'll figure out how to communicate with people because not everyone speaks English, and that's I'm entering that territory, so I need to be conscious of that and be careful and respectful of it. So that's gonna be one of those ones, especially, and that's gonna be one of those things that like is gonna be very interesting because this is my first time doing a major tournament like this. I've done plenty of PQs, right, but this is the first time, and it's in a different country. Depending on how this goes, we'll see if we can go to Lille, France. Next, that'd be kind of fun.
For May the 4th.
Yeah. So, but I don't know, it's super exciting. I think that if anyone is in that region and has the opportunity to go, they should. It's the first one ever, so it's probably going to be one of the biggest, if not the most like exciting one, because it's all of the new stuff. People are going to be wanting to talk about it and hanging out and stuff. So, So, this recording has actually gone for a pretty long time. It's late in the evening. So we'll stop here. Appreciate your time, gentlemen. As we end the podcast, everyone who's listening, thank you so much for your support. Look forward to a new kind of raffle, another raffle for an Akbar, potentially, or some type of event to give out an Akbar showcase next week. And until next time, may the force be with you.